I'd like now to welcome Carolyn Fairman. She's Executive Director of Coffee Kids. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you here. Coffee Kids is a local nonprofit organization that does work very far away. What is it? What do you do?
Well, we're an international nonprofit that works with coffee farming communities. Right now, we're primarily in Latin America. So what we do is work with communities by partnering with local nonprofit organizations in those regions, and we work with communities to find alternatives to coffee. The reason that we do that is because there's so much poverty associated with coffee farming. What most people don't realize is that most coffee farmers earn as little as 3 or 4 cents a pound for the coffee that they pick by hand. So what Coffee Kids does is listen to what community needs are and helps them implement projects that address quality of life issues. So our projects are really varied. Excuse me, I just need to take a breath. So our projects are really varied depending on what the communities see as their most pressing problem. So healthcare is a really important one. Education, so that students have more opportunities for their future. Microcredit, so women's community banking, so that women can take out small, low-interest loans and contribute to the family economy. And then community-based projects, things like chicken raising, organic vegetable gardening, things that provide food for the family and income by selling the extra, like, eggs or vegetables.
So basically, you go to people in, you know, Central America, South America, wherever. Is it mostly Latin America-based, or you also do stuff in Africa?
We are not currently in Africa. We're a pretty tiny nonprofit. Our budget is under $1 million, and so we started in Central America because our founder, who owns a coffee shop in Providence, Rhode Island, Bill Fishbein, went to Guatemala and saw firsthand what the poverty was like for coffee farmers. And when he returned, he just could not continue his business, which was quite successful, on the backs of people who were living in plastic tents. So it started in Guatemala and has sort of grown out in that way. That's why we're in Central America, Mexico, and now we're also in Peru.
And so you actually encourage people not to grow coffee?
No, actually that's not true at all.
Okay. And that's when you say alternatives to coffee growing, you mean so coffee and something else? Or?
Right. Coffee is a culture for people, and we would never suggest that people change their culture or change their livelihood. But like most of us, we need alternatives or diversification in our lives. Coffee is harvested only about 3 to 5 months out of the year. So even if it were lucrative, which unfortunately it's not a year-round income. So people need supplemental incomes and they need year-round income. So a lot of these projects allow people to be able to do that, particularly the microcredit. It also allows women the opportunity to provide for the family economy, which in many of these regions is not as encouraged or as common.
Now, what are some of the actual things that people are doing with this microcredit? What are some of the alternatives?
Well, they'll start a local business, something that's needed in the area. They might make and sell tortillas. They might raise goats or chickens or pigs, and then they can sell them. And they might start a little hair salon was one of the things that was started because the kids needed haircuts when the school season started. So they're really varied depending on the local economy.
I've always wondered, let's say that you are the Bill Fishbein, the director of Coffee Kids, who founded the whole thing. He goes at one point, sees that there's real problems, real poverty, and then shows up and says, I want to help you live differently. I mean, what is that? It seems like so much of this kind of work would be about relationship building. What are those relationships like, and how do you start them?
It is entirely about relationship building, and I think the most important thing to remember in that is that you have to listen. You certainly cannot go into a community and say, here's what I think you should do. Here's how you should improve the quality of your life. So we listen to what communities say are their most pressing problems, what relates to their local economy, what is it that they can do that they will feel that impact. So by listening, we find out that their most urgent needs are for their children so that they have a better future, and food. That's the most important thing. So finding a way to put food on the table right now and year-round. So building sustainable solutions so that eventually they no longer need funding from coffee kits.
Well, that's something I was going to ask you about. I mean, are the projects you do self-perpetuating, where people then just take them and run with it and, you know, maintain them, teach other people what they're doing and so on?
That's the idea. And that's also why we partner with local nonprofit organizations in those regions, because then they have the staff with the professional trainings to be able to teach the community members how the project works. So say it's a organic mushroom growing project, so there's a new source of food. So they teach them how to harvest those mushrooms, how to grow them themselves, and then help them maybe create their own enterprise so that they're selling these mushrooms to the other families in the community or other neighboring community members. And then it becomes, then eventually they can teach other people in the community or neighboring communities how to harvest those mushrooms, and they no longer need the training. But at the beginning, that is certainly quite critical, that there's consistent training and follow through with any of the projects, so that there's a real understanding of how the project works, and then people can, as you said, run with it themselves.
Have you seen, in the time that you've been doing it, and you've been involved with the organization for a while, real genuine change in the quality of people's lives due to these projects?
You know, you do see change, but you have to recognize that change is really slow. And so it's hard to measure sometimes. One of the things that we see as change are some of these non-economic changes, which is self-esteem for women who have lived maybe in oppressed communities for a long time where machismo is really quite common. So for a woman to say, I now have a voice in my own home, I can make a difference in my community. And for men to say, I've seen that you make a difference, and I want to learn what you're doing, and I would like to join the microcredit group myself. That's changing gender dynamics. And children are learning from their mothers by attending, say, the microcredit savings meetings that they attend every week, and children are starting to save money. So this is something that's very new, and it's creating an entirely new culture of saving and much more gender equity.
Is there a backlash against that?
We have not seen any backlash against that whatsoever. There's definitely
Are the
resistance.
Men, the husbands, the brothers, and so on supportive?
They are now. At the beginning, there's certainly resistance. Unfortunately, what the women will face when they're first maybe going to join a microcredit group is, well, you know, what are a bunch of women going to do? Or you're just going off to gossip, or you're clearly having an affair. You know, really sort of standard replies, and there's not a lot of support. Fortunately, there's enough women who resist that, and they start going to the meetings, they start saving money, because the essential component to this microcredit project is that they are required to save, to demonstrate that they're capable of saving before taking out a loan, which might be $50. And the savings is something that might be 25 or 50 cents a week. So they start saving money, they take out a loan, they expand or start their small business, and the family sees that impact, and then the men have to recognize that they are eating better and they do have more consistent income. And so, as you mentioned before, the idea is that way they can stay at home on their farms and continue to harvest their coffee even when prices are low, even if there's a drought or a flood. So the idea is to continue harvesting coffee, but to have supplemental and year-round income.
We're talking to Carolyn Fairman, who's the director of the organization Coffee Kits. Now, the land that people are growing coffee on, does that tend to be locally owned by the people you're talking to, or is it plantations owned by great big coffee companies and these are just employed labor?
Well, it's really varied. There's a little bit of everything. Most of the world's coffee farmers are small-scale coffee farmers, so they just have their own small piece of land.
So they do own their own land.
Yes. But in many regions, women are not allowed to own land. So if there's a crisis and there's out-migration so that a man has to go to the big city or cross the border to try to get a job to send money home, the farm gets abandoned. And because it's also an incredibly labor-intensive crop. And if the woman has no recourse because she doesn't own the land, it could get taken away from her.
So You said something a moment ago that struck me. You said people need food and they want a better future for their children. That's something that everybody always says, a better future for our children. What does that mean? What are they talking about? Are they talking about letting them go off to the big city? Are they talking about, what do they envision as that future?
Well, the way that, for example, the scholarship program works that we support, when we have a scholarship program in Nicaragua and one in Costa Rica, it allows children to continue to go to school, and it also provides scholarships for high school and university and technical students. And what that means is they learn a skill that they can bring back to their community. So they might become teachers or agronomists or even economists, and it's something that they can come back, live in their community, and help kind of bring their community more into present time and meet present needs. And so the idea is not that they go to the big cities and stay there and leave their communities. They do come back. And many of these coffee farming families are also members of coffee cooperatives. So another way that they give back is by working with their cooperative. And so it provides jobs. They might create ecotourism, which is something that we're seeing a lot, particularly in Nicaragua and Costa Rica. And that brings more money into the local economy and, again, creates jobs.
Now, you are, among other things, taking Americans on trips to some of these coffee-growing areas.
We are. This is a new thing that we've been doing that we started this past year, and it's really incredible. One of the things that I've seen when I've brought, say, longtime supporters, donors to Coffee Kids to what's called trips to origin, and origin is where coffee is grown, to see firsthand not only how labor-intensive coffee is, but what these realities of life are for coffee farming families, what they're facing on a daily basis. What is the level of poverty? What is the difference when there's a Coffee Kids project in place? Or what is the difference if they're selling fair trade coffee or members of a democratically run cooperative? And what they'll see is that these communities, these families that have all of the support, are still poor. There's still poverty. So it's a long road ahead, but the impact to see that firsthand is something that's almost indescribable. You can show people photos, you can talk to them about it, but to really experience it and have the opportunity to talk one-on-one with a coffee farmer or with his children and learn about what the difference is, because now they have a chicken raising project and they have food every day and maybe even meat every day. Has a really powerful impact. So we have taken several donors on trips, and we do two kinds of trips. One is a donor-arranged trip where, say, recently we took folks from S&D Coffee, which is a large coffee company based in North Carolina, to Nicaragua. So we arrange a special trip with them, and there was, I think, five or six executives from that coffee company to come down and see the project. So they can see the impact that their funding is having for Coffee Kids and continue to support our work. We also have...
Just to stop, hold you there for a second. It was very interesting. You and I were talking about this the other day. You bring people from this coffee company down to Nicaragua, and they remember the 80s when Ronald Reagan was trying to destroy the Sandinistas, and then they see that Daniel Ortega has been elected again, and they said, well, hang on, I thought the Sandinistas were the bad guys.
Right. This is what's also very interesting. You know, our work is not overtly political, but there's always politics involved when you're talking about poverty. And Daniel Ortega represents the poorest of the poor, and this is what anyone in Nicaragua will tell you. And the coffee farmers are the poorest of the poor. And what many people also don't realize is that Nicaragua is the second poorest country in this hemisphere after Haiti. So it is a very impoverished country. And so, yeah, we have some folks who maybe grew up thinking that the Contras were good and the Sandinistas were bad, and everyone has maybe their opinion and their history on that. So for people who are maybe afraid of the Sandinistas or learned to be afraid of them, to meet them face to face and realize that they're just people who want a better life for themselves and they're just struggling to survive, and didn't necessarily choose to take up arms but had no choice and had nothing left to lose, because when you're hungry and your farm's being taken away from you, you don't have anything left to lose, and you have fewer choices. So they were very thrilled to have Daniel Ortega back in the presidential seat as their hope.
And so here are these people from North Carolina looking at this. I mean, do you see when people go on trips like that that they're that their political opinion or set of ideas opens up a little bit?
A little bit. Not always. Some people will speak up about their fears a little bit, but maybe not be able to confront them directly. A couple of the folks were fantastic in terms of really asking questions to try to learn more about why the Sandinistas were so popular in the uprising in 79, why they were excited about Daniel Ortega being president again, and what that was going to mean for them, and have a real dialogue about it and really listen and try to understand where these people are coming from. We had one meeting of a women's microcredit group who all the women were also members of the what's called the women or the wives and mothers of the heroes, which means they're all women who lost a loved one in the Contra War in the 80s. And they have photos of their husbands and their children and their brothers. And they're very willing and wanting to talk about that history. So it was an opportunity for these people to really learn about that history a little bit more, why the coffee farmers are the poorest of the poor, and learn maybe not to be so afraid.
We're talking to Carolyn Fairman. Now, there's a film on PBS that is airing, I guess you'd call it, this Saturday, the 14th of April, at 10 at night. It's called Black Gold. What's it about?
This is a documentary that follows a man from Ethiopia named Tedesse Maskela, and he represents about 70,000 coffee farmers in Ethiopia, and he's trying to find a better price, a better market for all of these coffee farmers. Again, I've mentioned that coffee is a very labor-intensive crop. It's not year-round, and people do need to earn more money for that crop. This is one of the only crops or any kind of consumer good that the buyer sets the price. It's based on the world market price. So this follows Tedesse as he goes to the New York Stock Exchange, and he goes to Seattle, and he goes to London. He goes to the World Trade Organization and learns about what these goings-on are and how this affects these coffee farmers that he represents back in Ethiopia, and how they need to get not only a better price for their coffee, but as I would say, they also need alternatives to coffee. So it's really an amazing film, and gives you a lot of insight into what these realities are for coffee farmers. And what I would say is, while a better price is important, it's not enough. There is no one single solution to this problem. And I think if we work together and we recognize that there are a lot of people trying to make a difference for coffee farmers, and work together and maybe look at better prices, look at alternatives, look at what the different specialty coffees are, and organics and shade grown and bird friendly, and that is all worthwhile, and pay attention to that. So I would really highly recommend that you watch this film. Again, it's Saturday, April 14th at 10 p.m. on public television. And
for those of you staying home on Saturday night,
I know.
Looking for something to do. What do you think is the most effective program that Coffee Kids has done so far?
That's a hard question. I think that they're all effective in their own way. I mean, I think that a family that has started, say, a chicken raising project, and they now have their own source of organic meat and eggs and can sell the surplus, that's a huge success for that family and for that community. The microcredit has been incredibly successful because, for example, in Veracruz, in 1995, we began working with this organization in Veracruz, and started with maybe about 100 women participating in the microcredit groups, and they hadn't saved any money yet. And today, there are over 2,000 participants, which include men and children, and they've saved collectively, and remember, this is an average of about 50 cents a week, over $700,000. So what happens is they create their own loan fund, and they no longer need money from Coffee Kids.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I've lived off and on in Latin America, and I've found a real antipathy to saving money. I mean, whenever anybody gets money, it seems that they go out immediately and spend it. And I once asked somebody, I said, why do you do that? Why don't you save it? And they said, because we live in a world where anything can happen at any day. There can be tremendous inflation, so that, you know, the dollar or peso or whatever in my hand right now might not be worth anything tomorrow. So better to spend it. So savings really is based on this idea that there's going to be some political economic stability.
Well, saving for these communities, you know, I've listened to women in rural Huatusco, Veracruz, Mexico say it calms the nerves. It's made an entirely immeasurable difference in my life to know that if my child gets sick, I don't have to abandon my farm. You know, what can happen is something as simple as a child getting sick is it means losing a day's wages by going to the nearest clinic, which may be a day's trip away. And that costs money to take the bus to get into town. It costs money to pay the doctor, and it costs money to get medicine. And that can put a family into debt and mean out migration and completely break up a family. So by having some savings, they can cover the cost of the medications or that trip to the doctor if that's what's necessary, and then families can stay together. So it's you know, some of the issues are not the same that we think about here
right.
in the United States.
We've got just a few seconds left, but you are going to be giving away a trip, one of these trips that we're talking about to the coffee lands, to Costa Rica.
We are. I'm so glad you mentioned that. So you have an opportunity. Anyone can go on these trips to visit Coffee Kids Projects and also to learn about the coffee process. So you'll see this from seed to cup, how coffee is harvested. And it's a process that's something like 23 steps from seed to cup. So it's very interesting. You'll also meet with scholarship recipients that Coffee Kids supports. So anyone, first of all, can sign up for this trip. It's going to be in November. The dates right now are the 6th through the 12th. That could change by a day or two. But you can also win a trip, all expenses paid.
So there's a raffle?
We're having a drawing.
A drawing.
And so it's a suggested donation of $25. And if you're interested, please you can go to our website, and if you want to donate there, on the comment section, you can mention that it's for the drawing, for the trip to Costa Rica, or please give us a call.
So the website is coffeekids.org, and the phone number is 820-1443. Carolyn Fairman, thank you so much for being with us and talking about Coffee Kids.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.